Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Happy Wednesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour black hole block party. GA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City. Broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Boise to Birmingham, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
But they listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live for the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. How are we doing, everybody? Thanks so much for joining us. We've got a big show coming up for you. We'll talk Chiefs and Patriots AFC Championship game with the best rookie of the Chiefs draft class, young nose tackle Derek Nnadi. He took over as a starter midway through the season and has consistently provided very sturdy support in the middle of that defensive line and opened up some single coverage, single blocking for the edge rushers. The pass rush for the Chiefs defense is the strength of the Chiefs defense. And Nnadi's a big part of that and stopping the run. We will talk to him coming up next hour on the show about the Arctic blast and the frigid temperature scheduled to be all over Arrowhead Stadium and the Kansas City area coming up on Sunday for the game. Also, we'll discuss Antonio Brown. Has he gone total diva? One of his former coaches says so. Which quarterback in that AFC title game will be most affected by the cold? Did the Bucks of Milwaukee ruin the NBA? We'll talk about Brady's commentary that's caught a lot of flack around brain trauma. His commentary to Jim Gray that has made a few former Patriots teammates of his more than upset. And UCF becoming an official big-time program by getting kids from college football playoff contenders. All of that coming up this morning on the show. As always, you can hit us up on the phones at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, on Twitter, DA on CBS. Let's begin, though, with the Warriors. Because all season long, we've seen the Warriors not really play like the Warriors. We've seen Golden State look out of sorts. We've seen Golden State lacking joy. We've seen Golden State infighting. We've just seen a Warriors team that feels and looks like a lesser version of itself. I've compared the Golden State Warriors this year to the 1998 Chicago Bulls. That Bulls team knew it was marching to the end of something. They knew that Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause and Phil Jackson was not going to work after that. They knew that Scottie Pippen wanted to be a leader of his own team or go somewhere else outside of the shadow of Michael Jordan. They knew that MJ was thinking about stepping away again. They knew it felt like they were coming to the end of that run. But they coalesced and came together, muscle memory, because they were so talented and so great, to win their third straight championship and 6 out of 8 years. And then after the season, everything blew apart. Phil Jackson left. Michael Jordan retired. Scottie Pippen left. And it just was an obvious turn-the-page season. I have felt all along like the Golden State Warriors are in that same boat, that they know that maybe Klay leaves. They know that Kevin Durant probably leaves. They know that Draymond and the Kevin Durant factor is not working. They realize, I think, that there's an overall exhaustion to what has happened over the last couple of years. It's hard to keep it going when there's this much scrutiny. It's hard to have guys that want to play together forever. There's just ego that gets in the way. What happens when you win gets in the way. As Pat Riley might say, the disease of me. When you win titles, people begin thinking of me instead of we. And so since we've seen the Rockets play really well, specifically James Harden play really well, the Denver Nuggets a total surprise, the Eastern Conference having a couple of behemoths finally kind of rounded to form in Toronto and Milwaukee. It has felt this year like it's the end of something for the Warriors. They just didn't have the same spark. Heck, we played audio for you a couple weeks ago where Steve Kerr is openly discussing what he needs at the trade deadline. What you need at the trade deadline, you've won 3 championships in 4 years. You are probably the most talented team of all time. And you need something at the trade deadline? My goodness. You need more than this? So it has just felt as though the Warriors were coming to an end this season. And then you have last night. And then you have last night where against that Nuggets team that they were looking up to in the Western Conference standings, against that Nuggets team, they absolutely go off in Denver. On the road, at altitude, the Golden State Warriors put up 51 points in the first quarter. In the first quarter, they were on pace after one to score 204 points. And when the dust settled, the Warriors had 142 points last night to absolutely dismantle Denver, 142-111. And suddenly in those standings, as the football season wraps up here with only 3 more games, and we turn our attention to the NBA here shortly, the Warriors are once again at the top of the Western Conference standings at 30-14. Did Golden State prove last night that they're officially back? It's where we begin. Your cold open.
Curry pump fake flyby. 3 ball left wing. Yes! Curry hits one. 46 in the first quarter for the Warriors, who are 9 of 13 from distance. Durant up court. Takes one by the Pepsi center side and nailed it! Ridiculous!
Beautiful basketball. I just like the way our guys move the ball. A lot of shot fakes. Playing with purpose. Playing with a simple style of execution, but aggressive at the same time. And that was as good as it gets tonight for us.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
Tim Roy, Warriors Radio on the calls. Steve Kerr after the game. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson all played 30 minutes or less. And all of them had 27 points or more. Durant played 30 minutes, had 27 points. Steph Curry played 30 minutes, had 31 points. Klay Thompson had 25 minutes and 31 points. The Warriors hit on 21 three-pointers. They had 57 shots made. They made 57 shots. So did last night officially signal that the Warriors are back? The answer is no. Actually, no. Because last night doesn't change much in my estimation. I have always felt as though the only thing holding back the Warriors are the Warriors themselves. That the Warriors, like I said, lack of joy, lack of chemistry, maybe exhaustion, maybe understanding it's towards the end. That's the only thing that is limiting them on a nightly basis from being the best team in the NBA by a long shot. Look, I'm like you guys outside of the Bay Area. Unless you're in the Bay Area, you're rooting for anybody but the Warriors. Because it's just been so predictable and so boring to see them march through to championships. So I say, go Bucks, go Raptors, go Rockets, go Nuggets, go anybody. A-B-W, anybody but Warriors. However, last night doesn't change anything besides that they still have the ability to go off against a really good team. Again, that was the number one team of the Western Conference that they just dropped a 50-burger on in the first quarter. What it tells me is that the Warriors can only be held back by their own inner problems, their own inner confrontations, their own inner demons, whatever that is, because they might still be the train in the Western Conference playoffs and the NBA Finals that you simply cannot stop. They might be. They could be. They should be. But they might also finally get nipped. And they might not always play like that, but they've always got that in them. And so to me, in the NBA Finals, while we all would like to believe the Raptors have caught up, the Nuggets have caught up, the Bucks have caught up, that there's all these teams that potentially could take them down, the Rockets have caught up, we want to believe this. I don't necessarily believe it. We want to believe it. I don't believe it because they still can do that, and nobody else can do that. Nobody else in this league can hit 51 points in a quarter and score 146 and take all of their starters out. 142. Nobody else can score 142 and have all of their starters on the bench for the fourth quarter. They're the only team that can do that. They control whether they win another championship. Now, I'm not saying that they won't slide back into stretches of mediocrity or boredom. I think they will. I don't think they'll look like that often. But when it matters most of the playoffs, if they can bring it together for their 20-plus games, I think once again they are the locomotive that you simply cannot stop until somebody finally leaves. And hopefully that's Clay. Hopefully that's Kevin Durant. Hopefully it's somebody or multiple people. Because as long as they are together like this, that can happen, and nobody else can do that. 855-212-4CBS, the phone number. 855-212-4227. On Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back here on the show, some football. Antonio Brown has probably shot his way out of Pittsburgh. And his former coach says he's got too much diva in him right now. It's next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
Bellagio in a deep left. Cha-ching! And they're on the board in the bottom of the second. Line drive, left center field. This hit coming around is Amendolora, a seafood platter for all tonight.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Perhaps the worst moment in DA show history, perhaps the worst segment in Mothership history, and we keep reminiscing about that with this rejoin. I'm about to delete that as soon as the show is over.
It's
terrible. Jacob, it was terrible. Jacob Wilkins was the voice of the legendary Chicken Challenge and put himself on the map. And then joined us from the baseball winter meetings and gave us a big steaming pile of dog you know what. It was set up. It was discussed. We had gone over the play. I had run film on it. We had sat in the film room. Here's how it's going to go. And then you give me that.
A lot of nice weather.
You give me that. You're off the show. It's amazing. We are banning Huge Freeze for life for bad football picks. And yet here's Jacob Wilkins with the worst segment in DA show history, and he's allowed to come back on.
Well, it's early in the day.
Not only should he be banned for life, we should send him to a moon colony. He should never be allowed back on this planet. Ironically, because this is the mothership. He should not be allowed back here.
A multitude of different ideas.
It stunk, it stinks, and it still makes me mad. You know, I got over my anger towards Richard Justice, MLB.com. Big shot. Oh, suddenly you can't wait through a little break. Fine. I got over my anger towards Bobby Valentine, trying to get Mraz fired. Okay, fine. I'm allowing Art Garfunkel and Jack Kay to come back on the show. I even smiled when I saw a picture of Robbie Rosenhaus and Joey Chestnut together. I smiled. The only thing that still irks me to no end, the only thing that you could really wipe this smile off my face, is the Jacob Wilkins winter meeting segment.
Well, if I must.
I feel like Deacon Jones looking at a quarterback. I want to rip his head off. I want to come around the edge, put him into a sack, and beat him with a baseball bat, as Deacon Jones would say.
All right.
He stinks. Never to be forgotten, Mraz.
Wiener.
You're making me feel bad for the poor guy. He still has had great moments.
He did it to himself. He buried himself.
He did bury himself, but again, the guy has still hit 60 homers for us before.
Okay, not bad. Feels like a long time ago.
Bellagio in a deep left.
No. Oh, Bellagio into deep left. Everything about that stunk.
Cha-ching.
It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet at me, DA on CBS. Anything you want to ask, pick a question, any question. Be listening later on to the show when we'll answer that question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Bruce Arians was the Steelers' offensive coordinator when Antonio Brown was a rookie. He joined Adam Schefter's podcast and said about his former wideout, quote, "There's too much miscommunication, too much diva. I've heard so many stories. I like Antonio. He plays as hard as anybody on Sunday. He practices hard. He's just got to make better decisions off of the field, be on time, do some of those little things." Arian said he was the hardest working wide receiver on that team. He and Emmanuel Sanders. Boy, they went after it. Because Mike Tomlin used to tell them, two dogs, one bone. Which editorial note sounds like the exact perfect phrase for Mike Tomlin, right? Like, if you had to guess what Mike Tomlin might say to his young players, two dogs, one bone, boys. Better not blink. Cut your eyelids out. Arian said, at that time, we had Mike Wallace, Hines Ward. We had a pretty good run of getting those guys onto the field. At the end of the season, they were both winning for us enough to go to the Super Bowl. That was the year that they went to the Super Bowl and lost to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Is there too much diva in Antonio Brown? Yes! I don't know how you define diva. But whatever is problematic to the team concept, whatever it is about making it about you and not the team of the ultimate goal, AB's got too much of that. And I don't think Antonio Brown is a terrible human being, but he does not fit into a pulling in the same direction dynamic of which you must have at some level to win and win big. It is the reason I am completely in support of T.O. not having been a first ballot Hall of Famer. Because those that just want to look at stats are consumed by fantasy numbers. We'll look at his numbers and say, well, T.O. belongs in the Hall of Fame. And yes, by statistical merit, T.O. does. But you are also graded on things that are not brought up in statistics. It's why offensive linemen get into the Hall of Fame. You know, everybody that always argued that T.O. deserved in the Hall of Fame because he had the numbers. Other positions, we don't go by the numbers. It's so one-dimensional to simply look at the numbers and say, see? Look at his value. That's not true. Look at the points the Chargers put up on Sunday. 28. But at no point in time were they in the football game. It was garbage stats. Garbage, because when the game was in doubt, they were terrible. So, I had no problem with the voters keeping T.O. out on his first ballot because, yes, the stats were worthy enough, but his contributions to teams were a detriment too often. How do I know? Because multiple times in his prime, he was traded and or released. We all know he was incredibly productive, but his production did not outweigh the negative that he brought to the team, which you have to factor into a Hall of Fame candidacy. I'm fine with him ultimately getting in, but I have no problem with him not being in the first ballot. There are some things you have to weigh that are not about stats. Same thing with AB. He puts up amazing numbers. He is one of the most productive wide receivers of the game. But if you can't win with him because he's feuding with coaches, or he's feuding with media, or he's feuding with his quarterback, or he flat out quits on his team going into week 17, it ain't worth it. The best case scenario for the Steelers is to somehow make peace and to get everybody to get on the same page and get along. Because if you have AB, head screwed on straight, you're a better football team. But if you can't get there, then you must release him or you must trade him. And I think the Steelers are obviously shopping him. And I've said this before, careful what you wish for, Antonio Brown, because you'll go end up on a team that doesn't win nearly as much as the Steelers, and you see how much you like it there. Do I think Ben Roethlisberger has his own flaws? Absolutely. Do I think that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't need to do that weekly radio spot where he seems to be a little bit too honest and too open in his critique and personal critique of players by name and of specifics? Yes. Do I think that Ben Roethlisberger also plays diva at times, that he needs to stamp his feet, get his way? Yes. Do I think he is at times too attention-driven or too self-involved? Yes. But I'll tell you the other thing. Here's the dirty little secret, unfortunately, for Antonio Brown. Guess what? There was Emmanuel Sanders before you. There was Mike Wallace before you. There was Plaxico Burress before you. And there's going to be Juju Smith-Schuster after you. What do they all have in common? Ben Roethlisberger. Pittsburgh Steelers. So all of those guys that also shot their way out of town or were unhappy about their role or whatever, their common thread is the Steelers and Big Ben. So what's the problem? Who's the problem? Who's the real problem here? Is the real problem the series of wide receivers that the Steelers used, got production out of, and then moved on from? Or is the problem the one guy that's been there through all that? Ben is not flawless. Ben is not without some blame. But AB's going to find out real quick what it's like to be a wide receiver in a team that doesn't win a lot of football games and doesn't have a future Hall of Fame quarterback, and he'll really enjoy that. Also, on Bruce Arians, I mean, I think it's about time Bruce Arians stopped talking as well, right? Because Bruce Arians said, I'm not coming back to coaching because of my family and my age. And then he said, I'm only going to come back to coaching for the Browns job, nothing else. And then he came back to coaching, and it wasn't the Browns' job, it is the Buccaneers' job. And now he's also talking about other teams' wide receivers. Mraz, did Bruce Arians say anything even close to this interesting in a year of broadcasting?
No, I found him, now that he's not with CBS, I feel no problem saying this, I found him to be extremely boring through his first year as an analyst.
He did 16 football games, never said anything interesting. Suddenly, he's the head coach of the Buccaneers for like 5 minutes. He says something interesting.
He sounded like he was just watching football games in a robe smoking a pipe. That's what he sounded like for 17 weeks.
When we come back here on the show, a little sound check, your best audio of the day. So stick around for that. We also got Derek Nnadi, who's going to join us, Chiefs nose tackle. We'll talk to him in advance of playing Tom Brady and the modern-day dynasty known as the Patriots. He'll join us 1 hour from now. When we come back, Jerry Jones claims Jason Garrett would have a job within 5 minutes if he was fired in Dallas. Is he crazy or right? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
Do you still feel a couple years later
that way? I'm not so interested in. You're using low journalism. That's not nice. Come on.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Man, Pete the Body Bilotti going greatest hits of the lowest moments in DA show history.
I'm not so interested in.
Jacob Wilkins from the winter meetings this year combined with Art Garfunkel cursing at me and hanging up the phone. 40 minutes past the hour. Full episodes are available on iTunes. If you've missed anything or want to hear it again, that's okay. Just simply search my name and CBS on iTunes, and you'll be able to download full episodes there. Also on our website, daoncbs.com. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227 to get involved. It's brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to GEICO. Go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And by the way, football is about to get funner with Skittles, Snickers, and M&M's brands. The official sponsors of Super Bowl 53. Pump up your party all post-season long. Coming up next hour on the show, Chiefs nose tackle Derek Nnadi. Derek has an interesting history with the DA show. Coming out of Florida State last year, going into the NFL draft, we had him on before the draft. And I had mentioned to him, he was a very bright young man, nice conversation, talked about some of his strengths, some of his weaknesses. Once we get into March and April, we do a lot of rookies and draft prospects, potential rookies and draft prospects, and talk to them before the draft. And we really enjoyed our conversation with Derek Nnadi, and I mentioned to him how he was projected in perhaps the third or fourth round. It was very diplomatic. Very professional in the conversation. And he ended up getting drafted in the third round by the Chiefs. However, we found out behind the scenes that he was none too pleased with me for suggesting that he was going to get drafted in the third round. This is just simply where the draft projections had him. But we'd heard behind the scenes that he was upset that I didn't consider him a higher round draft prospect and basically said, I'll show him. Now, it certainly wasn't my scouting grade, but whatever motivation works. And Derek Nnadi has turned into the best rookie of the Chiefs' draft class. He began as a backup and then took over as a starter midway through the season and has been a really steady presence in the middle of that defensive line. So it's going to be good to have Derek Nnadi's triumphant return here on the DA show. Essentially, what he's going to say today is, how you like me now, DA? How you like me now? So he'll join us coming up in an hour from now. But let's get into your best audio of the day, boys and girls. It's time for soundcheck.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
As we talked about in the opening of the show, the Warriors exploded last night. A season that's been pockmarked by bad losses, getting smacked around by some rivals, looking like there's been infighting or boredom or detachment. last night, they can still do dominance. They score 51 points in the first quarter. 51. And end up with a 142-111 win over the Nuggets.
We were just very purposeful about how we were creating shots. Everybody kind of staying within themselves, but shooting with confidence. And everybody got touches, which was nice. Using their aggressiveness against them. And obviously, you got to make shots. We're a talented team, and when we do that, tough to beat.
What's hysterical is that first quarter, the Nuggets scored 38 themselves. That's a pretty damn good first quarter for the Nuggets. But it was 51-38 after the first. And this year's NBA is just bonkers because there's almost no defense being played. Everybody is scoring in the 110s, the 120s, the 130s, even the 140s. I mean, last night the Warriors hit 142. They weren't the highest scoring team last night. This is all in regulation. The Hawks also hit 142, and the Sixers hit 149. Guys, we're not far away from a 200-point game. I mean, if the Warriors wanted it, they could have hit 200 or at least closed in on 200. And that's, to me, what Steph, that's, to me, what Steve Kerr should allow his guys to do. If this is the swan song for the Warriors, and for the sake of competition, for the sake of parity, for the sake of allowing somebody else in to crash the party and hang a banner, let's hope that it is. But if this is it for the Warriors, Steve Kerr should say, okay, guys, if this is going to be it, let's go for broke. Let's go for every offensive record. Steph, let's try to get you 100 points. Klay, on a night where your shot is dropping, let's try to get you 80 points. You know what? If we hit 51 of the first quarter, turn on the gas. Let's try to score 200. Let's try to just shatter offensive records. Because what happens if KD leaves in the offseason? What happens if Klay leaves in the offseason? What happens if both of them leave in the offseason? And we never get this type of collection of offensive firepower again. Kerr, you owe it to us. You owe it to us to break the records as you are built. Don't sit all your guys in the fourth quarter. I want to see 200. If I'm going to see you guys rip through the league again, I want to see records broken. Jerry Jones joined 105.3 The Fan, our affiliate in Dallas, on the idea of letting Jason Garrett go after the season.
I look around at what other teams are doing and trying to do to find their head coach. If Jason Garrett had been out on the market 2 weeks ago, he would have had 5 offers for head coaching. I know that.
Not 5. It definitely wasn't 5. 1 or 2, probably. I mean, Mraz, if the Bengals say goodbye to Marvin Lewis, is Jason Garrett the next head coach of the Bengals if he was out there?
I think the Bengals would have definitely made an offer, and I think the Jets probably would have made an offer. Other
Dolphins?
Maybe.
I can see the Dolphins going to Jason Garrett route.
Yeah, maybe the only... All right, now that I'm starting to think about this, maybe there is 5, because Denver might have 2 under Elway as well with the quarterback situation. But I'd top it off there. The Browns weren't looking elsewhere. The Packers weren't looking at Jason Garrett.
Well, the Browns end up with Freddie Kitchens. If it was Jason Garrett as head coach and Freddie Kitchens as their OC?
Because I think they know Kitchens might be getting hired the next year for a head coaching job.
Okay. What we know is the Packers weren't going after Jason Garrett. That was not happening. I don't think the Cardinals would have went after Jason Garrett either. They were just blinded by the beautiful, piercing blue eyes of Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know about the Jets.
I think the Jets lean Garrett. Do you see what they just hired? I don't even want to make the comment, but we know what's going on there.
Make the comment? What?
The guy's got crazy eyes. There's something wrong with the man. Jason Garrett at least can look you in the face. Adam Gase, you can't even look at him in the face.
So you're telling me you would rather have Jason Garrett as head coach instead of Gase?
Yeah, I would.
Whoa.
Those eyes freak me out, man. You can't win with those eyes. It's over. Now I know why the Dolphins didn't win. And how we didn't know about him is beyond me.
Well, remember, he did go 10-6 one season, his first season in Miami. They made the playoffs.
Great. Got blown out in the first round.
But that was Matt Moore. That was not Ryan Tannehill.
Right. If he's panicking that much in a press conference, how can you trust the man to throw a challenge flag? First of all, how is he going to be able to see it?
I'm over it.
He had 3 years he could see the challenge flags. 3 years as the head coach of the Dolphins.
He never really was in a truly crucial big game other than that playoff game, and he lost it. You can't trust. The eyes are darting all over the place. I don't know what's going on. Something's up, and you can't trust the man.
If I'm the Cowboys, I would not have fired Jason Garrett this year either, because every single year we say, get to the playoffs, Jason Garrett. Get to the playoffs, the clapper. Win a playoff game, the clapper. Win the division, the clapper. And he finally won the division, got to the playoffs, had a home playoff game, and won it. And now I'm going to fire him? I can't do that with good conscience. Do I think he's a great head coach? Obviously not. Do I think he could ever win a Super Bowl? Obviously not. But do I think that this was the year to fire him? No. There were not good options. Unless you're going to promote Chris Richard from within and make him the head coach, there were not good options out there to fire Jason Garrett after what he just proved.
All right, a little hypothetical here.
Yeah.
Saints win the Super Bowl. Brees retires. Sean Payton decides he's had enough with New Orleans. Do you then fire Jason Garrett in a month to hire Sean Payton, knowing how much Jerry Jones loves Sean Payton?
If Sean Payton's willing to come, absolutely. If you can,
well, that's not very fair to Jason Garrett once all the jobs have filled up.
Well, if you can trade up for Sean Payton after winning a Super Bowl, if the guy that has won two Super Bowls and just won a championship wants to leave, yes, you fire your guy. I don't think there's a lot of coaches I would keep if Sean Payton wanted to come after winning another Super Bowl.
I'm just saying that would look very bad on Jerry Jones' part, talking this highly of Garrett.
Well, Jerry Jones always looks bad.
Clap on, clap off. The clapper.
And finally, Eagles VP of Operations Howie Roseman on the Nick Foles question.
As we go into the substance of those discussions, we haven't had them yet, but there's no question we love having Nick Foles as an Eagle in Philadelphia, and we'd love to keep him.
He gone. They are definitely trading Nick Foles this offseason. Definitely.
I love how he goes as an Eagle in Philadelphia. Like, what did that mean? As if a member of the band, the Eagles? We know that it's in Philadelphia.
Look, there's no doubt that Nick Foles has a very special place in the heart of all Philadelphia Eagles fans and that organization, rightfully so. But they know the deal here, and I don't want to say they're happy they lost the divisional round. The longer that thing went, the harder the decision was going to make. And the fact that they lost the divisional round after only scoring 14 points finally made the decision for them. Okay, now we can cut bait with Nick Foles. And as I said on Monday, I think it's the right move by the Eagles. I think you attach your saddle to Carson Wentz, but it would not surprise me if Carson Wentz never reaches the promised land, and it would not surprise me if Nick Foles never reaches the promised land anywhere else again. I think this was a perfect marriage of coach, of system, of city, of locker room, and that this will be Foles' peak, and anywhere else he would have gone or will go, it's not going to be the same. But it's also not going to be the same with Carson Wentz either. And that is your sound check. All right, so I have spoken to a lot of people that have covered Adam Gase in Miami when he was in Denver with the Broncos, because I needed to get to the bottom of Crazy Eyes, of Crazy Eyes killer Adam Gase. And according to everybody I have spoken to, he has been like this over the last 3 years. I don't know why we didn't know this. I don't know why, because I feel like I had to have watched video of him in his introductory press conference in Miami. But he wears that cap low. He wears that cap low that I've made fun of because he's looked like a broham. Because he's insecure about his darty eyes and his peanut bald head. Which, let's face it, with the hat, he looks way better. Without the hat, he looks like kind of a zombie apocalypse Chad Pennington. So, I think maybe he felt exposed. I think maybe he felt insecure. And I've heard that he's just bad in social situations like that. But behind the scenes, with players, he's great. I mean, Peyton Manning and him used to trade football knowledge and barbs, that he can be a bro's bro. And so players like playing for him, unless you're Jarvis Landry, apparently. Unless you're Adai or Landry. Apparently, maybe Ndamukong Suh. Apparently, people really like playing for him and with him. And he's just bad in those spots and maybe bad with authority or people questioning him. And a press conference is about authority and people questioning him, actually physically asking questions, literally asking him questions. So, Mraz, if it's just a Crazy Eyes situation and he's not permanently Crazy Eyes behind the scenes, doesn't make it a bad hire. Maybe he just doesn't need to be in front of press conferences, which unfortunately he has to do every week. But
that's my biggest gripe. Does it affect his X's and O's and handling of a team? I don't think so. But in the heat of New York media, maybe that's an overrated thing. The idea that he's going to have to address the media, and if things aren't going well and the team is 3-13 and he's getting up there and his eyes are darting all over the place, it's just not going to end well and it's not going to play well. I think with those eyes and the press conferences
with
that
occur those eyes
in New York, I never thought I'd have this conversation at the beginning of the week. The man can't be trusted to be a head coach or a manager or any kind of person of authority in New York.
That's not fair. Could you imagine him accepting the Lamar Hunt Trophy as the AFC champions or the Vince Lombardi Trophy as Super Bowl champions and him talking about the win and where his eyes would go? I mean, it would just be darting all over the place.
Give you a headache watching him.
When we come back, which quarterback will be affected by the cold in Kansas City?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.